Hello, and welcome to another Untitled Project on the College Crosscast Network. My name is Saif Fakadu, and I'm a manager here at collegecross.com. And joining me on the other line is Bill Tharp of On the Banks. Bill, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Good. How are you? Just want to say appreciate you guys having me on. It's a real honor, and I'm excited to talk some lacrosse tonight.
No, it should be a really fun show. I was looking forward to this. And also, a special treat for our listeners on the other line is our boy, soon-to-be Syracuse grad, Christopher Deschampsy, also co-manager of collegecross.com. Christopher, how are you doing, kid?
Don't scare me with the soon-to-be grad stuff. I want to enjoy college as much as I can. But doing well. We leave for Charlottesville tomorrow for the ACCs, and it's a 7 o'clock. We have to be at Manly at 7, so I'm going to be tired.
Oh, wow. Are you flying out on the jet?
Oh, we're flying out. We're flying out.
I jet. Love when you get on the jet, Chris. I really do. I just love it. Bill, you know, one thing we always try to do on these pods, talk about the fact that, you know, it's always different talking to someone on Twitter DMs and then actually talking, you know, at least through Skype. I'm sure you have similar experiences with your the colleagues are on the banks, or you know, it's always, like I said, not weird, but, you know, different to actually talk to somebody after, you know, mostly just DMs.
Yeah, we have a nice long email chain, and everyone's popping in, you know, every now and again. And, you know, we're really dialed in with football and basketball and obviously now lacrosse season. But it's nice to talk to some actual live people over the phone and stuff. So this is really nice.
Shout out to Aaron, who actually got this all started with an introductory email, DM the other day. So he couldn't join us for the show, but, you know, he'll be missed. And Christopher, I always talk to you, so we already know how it feels to talk to each other. But exactly. Bill, before we get into actual lacrosse stuff and the nitty-gritties about bracketology, we love to get to know our guests a little bit. So I guess we will start out, like, you know, where are you from, like born in like early school years, and then, you know, we can move on to high school after.
Yeah, sure. So Central Jersey, it exists. So you might hear that Central Jersey does not exist, but that is where I'm from. Born and raised in Robbinsville, New Jersey. Grew up playing all kinds of sports, and in fifth grade, caught a lacrosse bug. And I just love New Jersey athletics, and I'm a huge fan of Rutgers sports. And, you know, I approached Aaron with the opportunity to write for On the Banks, I think in the fall of 2016 or 17. And it's been a really great opportunity, and I just love New Jersey. So.
You're definitely on the right pod, at least when I'm watching it. So, and shout out to Mercer County as a new resident of Central Jersey. I do love Mercer County.
Where are you
from
in Mercer County?
Right now in Trenton.
I live in Robbinsville.
Yeah, I was just looking on the Wikipedia. I was like, oh, right on. Shout out Washington Township.
No,
I love it. You know, I'm a Jersey boy, so I love all Jersey. So you won't hear any slander against Central Jersey around here. So it seems you grew up a little bit with lacrosse. Like, when I down in South Jersey, it was like at like St. Augustine and Ocean City High School when I was in high school. So we actually didn't even have, besides gym class. So I guess there was like local teams and travel teams in this area. Or, I mean, I know
Pretty big. The Robbinsville Raiders was our youth program in Robbinsville. Grew up playing there, and then went on to play 4 years at Robbinsville High School. And then actually went to play in college at Alvernia University in Reading, Pennsylvania. And now I'm back in Mercer County coaching lacrosse. I actually coach at Princeton High School. So my love for the game has kind of grown into the coaching side of it. But yeah, it just kind of I was playing basketball. One of my buddies, his dad said, I think you'd really enjoy lacrosse. And so I decided to go out for it. And at first I hated it. And then in our first game, I actually got body checked. And I just got up. I was like, this is awesome. And I've been hooked ever since. So.
What position were you? Sorry to interrupt, Chris, if you had one. But since we're already on your playing years, Bill.
So I actually played defense all throughout high school and college. And then my senior year of college, our goalies actually quit. So my senior year of college, I hopped in net. So
what was that interesting? It's like a goal. Have you ever played it before that time?
I was, when I was in youth, I for some reason I always like wanted to try goalie. So I hopped in net when I was maybe seventh or eighth grade, and then I never stuck with it. Always played defense, but got my bumps and bruises, and it was really challenging, but it was fun in a sense, you know, kind of pushing myself and challenging myself to step outside my comfort zone. And I like to think by the end of the season I was pretty good. So it was just a really rewarding experience. And, you know, we weren't the best team or anything, but, you know, I love those guys I played with. And, you know, I like to just, that's something I can always hang my hat on is, you know, I stepped up to play goalie my senior year of college lacrosse. So,
as every kid from Jersey knows the group. So what group was Robbinsville? Were you guys group two, group three? Or?
I think we were group one. It's changed so much now. Mm. But I think, I remember my freshman year, we would have played Mountain Lakes if we won our first States game. So I think that I would have had to be group one. And then we kind of moved up. So I think by my senior year, we were group two. But we were definitely on the smaller end of the schools.
Now, did you get into writing in high school, or did that happen later on?
Yeah, so the Trentonian newspaper had a little internship for it was called Teen Tonian, and they had some teen writers. So I did that, and then in college, I went to school as a communication major, and was doing, you know, the managing editor of my school newspaper. Did some sports broadcasting with the Crusader Sports Network. That's what we called our broadcasting. And I actually did a two-summer internship with the Trentonian, doing the sports journalism stuff. So writing's always kind of been in my blood. You know, like I said, I'm just a huge sports fan. So, and then the writing just kind of came natural to me. And I'd like having an outlet to kind of express my thoughts. And lacrosse is such a niche sport that people kind of watch it and they don't really understand what's going on. So I like kind of trying to break it down into, you know, layman's terms, because if you watch a game, there's so much jargon, and just kind of trying to break it down for the everyday person. And I love lacrosse, and kind of my thought process when I'm writing and stuff is I want people to love lacrosse as much as I do. So I really work to try to get that across in my writing.
Oh, no. Wow. No. Chris, I've been hogging the mic. You got something?
Don't worry. So when you were looking at schools as whenever you were going to school or whatever for your major in lacrosse, why did you go and pick Alvernia up in beautiful Reading, Pennsylvania?
Well, I can tell you definitely wasn't for the weather or anything like that. But I had a really, really great recruiting experience with the coach there. He was really passionate about the game. And then it was kind of that storybook feeling where you step onto campus and you're like, this is it. I actually ended up going back to school for my master's. So I like to joke and say I spent the best 6 years of my life there. But for me, it was just one of those things where I stepped on the campus and, you know, just fell in love with the place. And I kind of wasn't sure what I was going to go to college for. I had taken some sciencey classes, like environmental science, forensic science, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then, you know, I finally kind of laid my mind to journalism and communication. And, you know, my advisor there, he was really, really helpful. And we took a lot of classes that were called service learning. They gave you the opportunity to work in the community. And I was published many times. So it was just like the perfect experience for me in a small school. So it was really rewarding. And I have nothing but good things to say about my time at Alvernia. I wish the lacrosse team was a little better. But, you know, my senior class, we were the winningest class in program history. So I can hang my hat on that.
That's good there. So in your 4 years, three as a defenseman, one as a goalie, your favorite moment as a college lacrosse player? Outside of the year as goalie.
I could be cliche and say it was all the off the field stuff, and
of course,
because I like I said, I love my teammates and stuff. But there was this school that was from up in upstate New York called Mount St. Vincent, and we played them 3 years in a row, and every year it was overtime. And I remember my sophomore year, We beat them in overtime, and just it was just chaos, and it was so much fun. You know, storming the field with my teammates. I remember our goalie actually, something happened. He was out of net, and they took a shot, and I had stepped in goal and saved it with my leg. And it was just like, I'll always remember that game. And it's kind of cool. Like, Facebook has like those on this day memories and stuff. And actually, just recently, that picture came up, you know, celebrating that win. So I think if I had to point to one of my on the field moments, it would definitely be beating Mount St. Vincent in overtime my sophomore year.
Wow, so you definitely have a variety of perspectives, a perspective as a player, as a writer, and as a coach. So how did you get into coaching?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I had a really close relationship with one of our assistant coaches, and he was a coach with Tri-State Lacrosse based out of Rutgers, and he got me hooked up as an assistant coach and, you know, slowly, you know, climbed the ranks there. And I've been a head coach now at Tri-State for 5 years. And I just love working with kids and just really just have this passion for the game. And, you know, the guys at Tri-State have really given me the opportunity to flourish as a coach and as a person. And it was one of those things there. Once I kind of stumbled into coaching, I, you know, grabbed onto it, and it's taken me to a lot of cool places. You know, right out of college, I coached at a high school in Pennsylvania, and then last year I was at Immaculata University. Had a really rewarding experience there. So, you know, I've had that experience coaching in college, and now back to high school, jumping all over the place. But I love it, and just getting to work with some great people, and so learning a lot of different perspectives. It's been coaching has done so much for me in my life, and I'm just really happy to have that opportunity.
I got a kind of fun question. Like, I, you know, different area players get like different intangibles written about them. Like, you always hear like Maryland players are so heady and really good with the sticks, Philly tough. What would be like a Jersey baller characteristic?
I would say, you know, kind of Jersey tough. Kind of Jersey guys have that kind of grit about them. Then you could also spin it when you think about, you know, like the Bridgewater Raritans and the Summits and Mountain Lakes. They're system guys. You know, they grow up playing a system. So they have perfect fundamentals. So I think it's kind of where you're looking in New Jersey. But I would say probably tough, gritty, hard-nosed guys. You know, the Jersey guys are the ones who are going to run through a brick wall and not even realize they did it. I'm a little biased, of course, though.
I kind of had a follow-up on that. Like, having grown up, you know, in Jersey, at least South Jersey, we didn't have lacrosse, but I have seen it change the whole landscape. Like, do you think in the near future, like, we'll have more teams playing lacrosse and less teams playing football in Jersey? Or, like, you know, I definitely feel like there's starting to be a shift, especially in the, like, the Northeast area with the perspective, you know, how parents feel about football. So, you know, Jersey seems to be, like, right in the heart of it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. I grew up playing football. I love football. You know, when I have children one day, I want them to play football. And I hope that's not the case. But I do think that more and more schools are getting lacrosse. I know Trenton just started their own youth program. The Hamilton schools, you know, Steiner, Nottingham, and Hamilton West, they have all gotten lacrosse programs for the first time in history in the past couple of years. So I think it's a sport that is growing in popularity. On one hand, I don't know how long it's going to take to maybe break into urban areas, just because lacrosse is one of the more expensive sports to play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of tough in that sense. But I think that people are kind of seeing that we're up to 71, 72 Division I lacrosse programs. There's 200 Division III programs. There's 100 Division II programs. This is a way to get out of your hometown. This is a way to get a college education. This is a way to kind of do good by yourself and by your family. So I think in that sense, kind of kids are realizing their potential and saying, I want to take lacrosse to get me to the next level. But at the same time, you just never know with the financial stuff. But I love to see lacrosse grow. You know, Harlem lacrosse has become so popular, and you know, they just came to Princeton a couple weeks ago, and we had a big play day with Harlem, Trenton, and Lawrence, and it's just really great for the game, and these kids are just getting this exposure. So I want the game to continue to grow. I think it's awesome to see, and all across the world, you know, the game's being played, you know, with the World Cup and stuff coming up, Team Australia, the Iroquois team. There's just so much high caliber lacrosse, and it's spreading, and it's really great to see.
All right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do you think, in your opinion, that lacrosse is going to be turn out to be something like hockey, where, you know, as you mentioned, it's expensive to get all that equipment, helmets and sticks and shafts and all the padding and even nets, where it's similar to hockey? Or do you think it might, in the next few years, turn out that maybe some of this stuff becomes less expensive and more people in urban areas can play it, something like similar to like maybe like football?
So I think the obvious difference is there's a National Hockey League where that has athletes making millions of dollars, where the Major League Lacrosse guys, they're making pennies. You know, a lot of those guys,
$400 checks a game.
Yeah, so I think that kind of hurts the sustainability of it. Just in the sense that there's a future of it beyond college, but it's not, you can't raise a family and stuff being an MLL lacrosse player. You have to take the Paul Rabel or the Rob Pinnell route of being an ambassador for the game and having your own brand, and at the same time playing lacrosse and, you know, starting your own club team and stuff. But I don't know. I think lacrosse equipment keeps getting better and better, and that's a good thing, obviously, but that means prices are getting more and more expensive. And obviously, like, USA Lacrosse has their initiatives, and they're trying to make things a little cheaper and kind of, like I said, grow the game. So I don't know if prices will dictate how much the game grows, but I think, like, USA Lacrosse has some really great objectives that are going to try and kind of get the game to newer areas. I mean, think about it. 10 years ago, out west, Denver was playing. You know, they were playing lacrosse, but now you got Bill Tierney out with Denver, and Utah's adding Division One, and started working towards the Midwest with Marquette and Notre Dame, and now Cleveland State. So it's kind of branching out west, and the westward expansion of lacrosse. And I think as it goes to different areas, and, you know, Texas and out west in California, and as those places get it, I think maybe supply and demand, you know, as more people are playing lacrosse, excuse me, maybe prices will be able to go down. We'll just have to see as time goes.
Where do you think growth starts? Do you start it at the program, or do you go grassroots, urban areas, starting with youth programs and working your way up the ladder?
I think you kind of have to start with youth, because by the time kids get to high school, they might be doing baseball or football or whatever. But I think if you start at the youth level, you kind of foster a love for the game, and you can grow. You know, whether that's with a club team or whether that's with your local rec league, I think there's pros to both of them. But I think you kind of, that grassroots youth movement is where you're going to go, because you're going to get a senior class, you know, in five to 10 years, you get a group of dudes who have played together since they're 7 or 8 years old in these urban areas. They're going to, you know, by the time they're seniors in high school, they're going to have that cohesion and that teamwork and stuff that's going to, you know, say, okay, we can do this. We're playing with dudes, you know?
Absolutely. So guys, get back to coaching real quick before we move on to like college and bracketology stuff. What is the difference for you, like maybe anxiety or like being able to play versus watching, you know, your players play, you know, between your playing days and now as a coach? Do you enjoy one more than the other, or do you, you know, are they both equal to you?
Yeah, I think I miss playing a lot. You know, it's fun. I still get to run around and practice a little bit and stuff. But I would say, just, I know so much more now, and it's like if I could go back in time to my high school self and my college self, you know, run that extra sprint, work out in the off season a little more. And I think I've kind of taken that knowledge and I want to just give it to these younger guys. And I've kind of picked the brains of all the people I've been around in the game. And I just really like spreading the love and the knowledge of the game. And like I said, kind of going back to the writing and stuff, I want kids who I coach to love lacrosse as much as I do. So I it's hard. It's, you know, it's like that, you know, which child's your favorite, you know? Obviously right now with the coaching, I would probably say coaching. You know, I'm not having to run the 2 mile or do all those sprints and stuff. So, but I do miss it. I miss the camaraderie. I miss, you know, working hard, sweating, bleeding, fighting with those guys every single day. But it's I love being around the game. I kind of couldn't imagine my life without lacrosse.
Amen. All right, I guess we should move on to like more you know, Rutgers bracketology stuff. So I guess let's just first start on this one. How have you found how's the reception for the lacrosse team grown at Rutgers? Maybe you were a fan when you were in high school, but I'm assuming since you've been on the banks, you've been following it more. But it seems like, you know, at least these home games, you know, on Sunday nights for a Big Ten, like, you know, it's, you know, starting to be really kind of a popular team out there.
Yeah, I think the big thing is winning helps, obviously. You know, for the end of this Stagnita era and the beginning of the Brecht era at Rutgers, you know, they weren't winning as much. And, you know, now playing in the Big Ten obviously helps as well. But they're starting to win more. And I think Rutgers does a really good job of getting the high school teams from the area involved, and just kind of building up their fan base. They've kind of have their own grassroots thing where, you know, high school teams get in half price or whatever, different, you know, promotions like that. I think that's really helping. But I just think that Rutgers has kind of been in the national news the past couple of years because they've been perceived as a snub for the NCAA tournament, which hurts and helps. It hurts not making the NCAA tournament, obviously, but it's nice when you see the mainstream lacrosse guys being over to be in. So it's kind of positive in that sense. Just because Rutgers really has been snubbed the past couple of years, I think, and, you know, they've taken their questionable losses or whatever, and I think Brecht has kind of heard the criticisms of their out-of-conference schedule and whatever, and they've really beefed that up. But winning helps, and national attention has really helped them out.
So with football and basketball not really being strong in the Big Ten, as we know, you know, I'm a big football fan, big Hoops fan, and Rutgers is nowhere near the likes of Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, in either of those sports. Is Rutgers, and I know we joke about this on our site, is Rutgers a lacrosse school?
That's some Syracuse bias in that.
Yeah, question. I was going to say. But,
I'm Michigan, sorry to interrupt, Christopher.
Michigan State. Rutgers took Michigan State to overtime 2 times this year. Rutgers basketball. They're on the upswing with Coach Pikel over there. If Aaron was here, he'd be yelling at you right now. Aaron's our hoops guy. He would be. This would turn into a Rutgers basketball podcast. But
well, I'm happy he's not here.
Chris is discombobulated. There's going to be. He didn't realize all this jersey pressure is coming out of today.
No, I mean, I would say, I think Rutgers is a lacrosse school in the sense that the state of New Jersey supports it. I don't know if there's as much support from the current students. There's a lot of attendance at these Rutgers games, and it's from the high school kids and the youth. So I think that would be an area of disconnect kind of between the Rutgers students and, you know, the basketball and football games. You know, basketball, the rack gets sold out. I mean, for even the wrestling program, I would argue that Rutgers is probably a lacrosse and wrestling school right now. But, you know, the football team's doing some – they're getting there. But I think that if they could kind of find that connection and ways to get students as invested as Coach Pikel and Coach Ash and Coach Goodale from the wrestling program. They have done a really good job of cultivating interest from Rutgers students. And I think that's what the Rutgers lacrosse team is kind of lacking right now. So if they could kind of foster that interest, and then you might see that total shift to like a quote-unquote lacrosse school. But I think that the football and basketball programs are kind of always going to be number one, and I think that's like that of a lot of schools that also have lacrosse.
Bill, you bring up a good point on that disconnect. I think a lot of Division I schools in lacrosse do have that disconnect. I know Syracuse, you see a lot of parents in our games, and parents and high school players and coaches and whatnot, and then parents from the other team that would make their ways up to Syracuse for some reason. You don't see a lot of students at our games. Maybe some friends and maybe some women's lacrosse players there if they're not playing a game or they're not on the road. And then I think probably with like Duke and Virginia, some of the blue bloods that when I've been to games this year, it's been the same thing. A lot of parents, a lot of high school teams and coaches, maybe some alums that just decide to come because they used to play on one of those teams when they were in college. So I think that point that you made with Rutgers is a big point overall. I'm not sure, Safe, if you would agree with Hopkins as well on your end.
100%. I think the big stadium thing, I know we kind of made fun of Quint when he pointed out about like the lack of fans at the Maryland-Rutgers game instead of how amazing of a game that was as his first point. But I think Rutgers will be helped by the I like to consider it a lacrosse-only facility, Bills, but obviously I know soccer is getting in there. But I think that will help because when you look at schools like Penn State and Hopkins to an extent, but Homewood has his own thing. But like Penn State, Notre Dame, these kids
Michigan.
Like Michigan, exactly. Beautiful stadium, smaller, compact. There is some truth to that point about like the aesthetics, and I think. But I think Bill's main point is right. Like winning does everything.
Right, certainly. And sorry about that.
No, go right ahead, Bill.
No, I strongly agree with your point about the smaller stadiums. You know, over towards this way, right over the border into Pennsylvania is PPL Park, where the Philadelphia Union play.
You're damn right about that.
The ACC tournament for lacrosse was there a couple years.
You're
ago.
Damn right about that.
It should be back. Yeah, that's one of our bugaboos. Sorry.
that's like Red Bull Stadium. Those are the kind of atmospheres that are more in tune to lacrosse because lacrosse has a big fan base. But like for Memorial Day weekend, you scan over the stands and there's a lot of people there, but we're not filling up an NFL stadium.
You're right. Bill, I'm going to have to interrupt you because you brought up a good point about Red Bull Stadium, Red Bull Arena, actually, excuse me. From what I've heard, next year, Rutgers has been approached by people at Red Bull Arena to play a game at Red Bull Arena. And we were having talked at Syracuse because we have that home-and-home series, and we might be playing Rutgers at Red Bull next year.
Did you just that's break news, Christopher?
That's still the works, but yes. That's still the worst.
Wow.
So I think Syracuse is a little bit about it. Rutgers wants to – whoever's at Red Bull wants Rutgers to at least play a game there. It would make sense to have Syracuse as a non-conference game, but it all depends because we're supposed to be hosting next year in the Dome, and obviously we don't want to leave the Dome if we agree on a home-and-home, but I would be interested in that. I'd be really eager to see because I think that would be a great Final Four venue and that Red Bull. It's in the New York area, kind of technically New Jersey, New York area, and it's at the nice little soccer stadium.
They're all New Jersey, Chris. Philly, New York City is all part of greater New Jersey. So.
New Jersey.
Bill, so what are your impressions of Coach Brecht? I think, not making the tournament has hurt, but I find the way he's the style that he implements and the way his players play for him, it's not reckless. It's sort of like a contained ferocity, especially like the two previous years. And do you think that that's all comes from Coach Brecht, or do you think there's some areas he could improve on and stuff?
I think that I would classify as, you know, somewhat organized chaos. But I think that kind of they have followed trends in lacrosse, you know, with Lars at when he was at Brown and just that hyper speed offense, and now what Lars is doing at UVA. I think offenses are perceived to be playing faster. I know the guy who does the Lax film room or on Twitter and stuff, he talks a lot about how kind of teams are perceived to play fast, but in reality the pace of play has kind of plateaued a couple years ago and is now back down. So I don't know if that's Coach Brex, if that was his own thoughts, or if that was kind of the thoughts of just the way lacrosse is going. I think he's done a very good job of developing talent and finding talent in unknown areas. You know, this year Ryan Gallagher, the freshman, is from Georgia. Casey Rose is from Utah.
I hate to bring Adam up a sore subject. Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, he's our boy. We love Adam.
Charlie Beattie's from Canada. I mean, Jules Henneberg's the only guy from Jersey. I think Casey Rose has become a better player. Christian Mazzone has become a better player. Kieran Mullins has become a better player. Now, that being said, I don't think he recruits New Jersey well enough. You know, there's some guys, you know, on Inside Lacrosse's top 25 freshmen. There's a lot of top 10 of those freshmen who are from Jersey, and they're at Villanova and Yale. And I totally get that a Yale education means a lot more than a Rutgers education. But at the same time, those are dudes that you got to kind of keep in state. And right now, that's just not happening. And I don't know if that's his recruiting plan. You know, like I wanna go to the Utahs and Californias, and you know, Tommy Coyne is from Chicago. Yeah. So he's I that would be my one
mid-year transfer too.
Yes. Yeah. He should be in high school right now. That's crazy to think about. But I wish he would recruit New Jersey a little bit better. And I think he has some really talented assistant coaches who help him out as well. But you can't deny the progress they've made under him. You know, going from a 3-4 win team to, you know, perennial top 10, top 15 program. The success has been undeniable.
That's kind of the blessing and the curse of being in a lacrosse-rich state. Is like, yeah, there's a lot of players, but it also attracts a lot of competitors trying to put your talent.
Right, and I totally get the idea of, well, Rutgers is an hour from my house. I want to go to school a little further away. I totally get that. But, you know, football has that problem. Basketball has that issue. Rutgers as a university just struggles to kind of fence in the top-tier talent. But I think, you know, like I said, Brecht has done a really, really solid job of developing guys and taking that second and third midi and making them into a top tier scorer. And Rutgers offense has totally changed. You know, 2 or 3 years ago when they really exploded, it was Scott Bita, Adam Charlebides, and Jules Henneberg, and they were an attack dominated team. And last year, you know, Jules kind of struggled. He kind of finding his place. And this year, I mean, between Rose, Mazzone, Henneberg, and Mullins, like, that's such balance between attack and midfield. And it's really huge for them. And I think that, you know, you got to give some credit to Coach Brecht for that.
So do you think, going off, well, maybe even transitioning to bracketology stuff, missing out the last 2 years of the NCAA tournament, do you think if they take the next step of then finally making an NCAA tournament, then you might see maybe more of these top end recruits come to Rutgers and say, hey, maybe there's something going on that's special up at Rutgers. I like Breck. I like the campus. I like where what the facilities are, especially the new one that's building up. Do you think maybe that next step will lead to more top end recruits?
Yeah, I hate to keep repeating myself, but winning cures everything, right? Mm-hmm. I think you know, bringing in those higher end guys. And like you said, if you win, you know, making, they made the Big Ten finals just 2 years ago. The first year they got snubbed when Beto was a senior, they got the, and Chris Elaine, that senior class, those guys, they made the Big Ten finals. You know, so is that going to change a whole ton? Because they've kind of been top tier for a couple years now. And college lacrosse recruiting is so unbelievable. Like, there's Division I teams that, you know, they had their 2019 class figured out 3 years ago. You know, so I think you're going to have to wait maybe one or two classes for that impact to really be felt. Just because of, like, early recruiting and stuff. You know, there's Penn State has a guy commit, a 2021 commit, you know, from before those early recruiting rules set in. So I believe, yeah. So I think that once kind of that initial wave of that last, I think it's like the 2020s. So the kids who are currently sophomores in high school, like starting with the freshmen, the, like the 2021 class, I think those kids are going to be more, eyes are going to be more open because they haven't been recruited quite like, you know, these other, these 2019s, 2020s, just because of the early recruiting stuff.
I wonder if maybe some of those kids that recruited early when they were in ninth grade, or in Brendan O'Neill's case, that eighth grader, in eighth grade, if they decide, you know, it's not right for them, maybe I want to rethink my decision. Because I know one of my good friends over at LaSalle, he was supposed to go to Penn State, Joey Taylor. He committed there. I would think he's a sophomore now, or a freshman, or he's a sophomore or junior. So when he was a freshman, he committed to Penn State. And then a few weeks ago, a month and a half ago, he decided to decommit. So I wonder if maybe some of these kids are rethinking their decisions, and coaches are going to be able to write those names down, actually recruit those players again, or what the recruiting tactics will be if they even will consider that player again.
Right, and I'm sure that, I mean, poaching has become such a thing now that I'm sure some of those kids, they've never really stopped recruiting them, you know? So I'm curious as well. But I think, like, once you kind of hit that 2021 class, I think that's where Rutgers is really going to shine, because those is in their ascent. And now if Rutgers stays at this level, their high-end athletic careers are only going to know Rutgers as a top 10 school.
Bill, one thing I think is really going to help Rutgers on their rise is Athletic Director Hobbs. He seems to be really, you know, not just lip service, but, like, you know, kind of a big fan of the sport. And I remember, actually, it kind of pains me to remember it, but when you guys beat Hopkins, I remember I've read some article, like, the president of the university was so geeked up about it that he, like, mentioned it at a board of trustees meeting. Like, the influence from the you know, school officials and the athletic director, is that you know, real and pronounced, or is that, like I said, kind of just like lip service stuff?
I think Hobbs is awesome, and, you know, the fundraising stuff, all the new facilities Rutgers is getting, you know, he's puts his name out there, he puts his face out there, he's kind of the unofficial face of Rutgers athletics, and I think he practices what he preaches, and I think he's great for the sport. You know, he's great for wrestling. He's obviously great for basketball and football. And you know, those other Olympic sports, you know, the baseball, softball, field hockey, all those sports. I think he's just been great for the program, and just great for Rutgers in general. I think he's a definite step in the right direction. And so far, most of his hires have been home runs. So, you know, I think that he's kind of got Rutgers' best interest in mind, and he's a good guy to have in Rutgers' corner.
I guess it was talk a little bit of bracketology. I got to ask you, again, I don't want to bring up unpleasant memories, but do you feel better off at this point in time last year, this year, or in 2016?
So I think this year is off to a better start for, you know, with, like, Bucknell losing last night or the other night in the Patriot League to Boston. That helps Rutgers because Bucknell was kind of a fringe team, and if they had won, they steal a bid from Loyola because Loyola is going to get in. We know Loyola is going to get in. So if Bucknell wins the Patriot League, they steal a bid. Now, last year what happened was Albany and Denver lose their conference championships. I believe it was Albany.
That was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and so they both lost, and they stole, you know, they kind of stole bids from Rutgers because they were heavy, heavy favorites, and Rutgers was kind of that last one in, you know, with Joe Lunardi does his, like, last four in, last four out, or whatever. Rutgers was right there, and then those two conference favorites lose, and Rutgers is just in a lot of trouble. This year, I mean, Albany has shown some cracks in the armor. Connor Fields is what is he at, you know, health wise, you know, losing to UMBC. That's a chance. Maybe if Albany loses their conference tournament, that means someone's losing a bid. If Villanova beats Denver, Denver's going to get in. So that's another bid that gets stolen. And, you know, depending how Villanova does, I think like the RPI is doing Rutgers no favors right now. I know UPenn was up very high in the RPI, you know, kind of based off one win against Duke. But it seems to – I think if Rutgers beats Ohio State, they're going to be in very, very good shape. And I think stealing a win over Hopkins or Maryland in the Big Ten tournament, whether they're seeded second or, you know, whether they're seeded third or fourth is going to help a lot. But just those killer losses to Maryland and Hopkins, like, it's like if they have one of those wins, then they're sitting in the driver's seat. So that's frustrating, but I do feel more confident this year than I have in the past. But as a Rutgers fan, it's like until that bracket is in my hand, I'm never too confident.
I think worse than that with this year. Let's go back to 2 years ago with looking at the win losses. Princeton, who wasn't that good. And then Maryland, Ohio State, and, well, actually, excuse me, Stony Brook, who was actually kind of good, Princeton, who was bad, Maryland twice, and then Ohio State, who finished under 500 last year, probably their best chance, Delaware, who finished up 7-8, Hopkins, who made the tournament, Maryland in triple overtime, Penn State. And now this year, started out with some tough losses. Army, who's now 5-0, they were really good at that point. Army was 3-0 or 4-0 at that point. They finished 5-7. They did beat. They lost to Syracuse this year. So Army,
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, they lost to Army, who's now 5-7. They lost to Princeton in overtime, who may or may not make the Ivy League tournament. And then, as you mentioned, Hopkins and Maryland. So, you know, with those two tough losses earlier in the season, do you have to win the Big Ten in order to make the NCAA tournament based on what's happened the past 2 years?
You know, it's in my mind, they don't have to. But again, when you see these bracketology projections, Rutgers isn't in it. So it's like, where's this disconnect? And it's like, obviously, if you win the tournament, if you win the Big Ten tournament, you're in. But I think beating Ohio State, I think they got to win one game in the Big Ten tournament to really lock it up, just because there's so much unknowns with that like back eight. You know, UVA, the computers love UVA. Computers love Notre Dame. Computers love Syracuse. You know, going back, we said Rutgers, the year Rutgers beat Hopkins, and Hopkins made the tournament over them. You know, could something like that happen this year with Syracuse?
Sorry about that. I think as long as you beat Ohio State, and as long as you just play a Big Ten championship in the Big Ten tournament, you should be good. Like, there's last year, you guys just didn't make the Big Ten tournament, and
correct, yeah, because they just. Disappointing loss to Penn State.
Bill, here's one thing I'm looking at, because I'm also doing my bracketology that will be up by Thursday or Friday in College Cross. Syracuse's strength of schedule is 3. All right, Hopkins is 7. Maryland is 5. 1006, whatever. Rutgers is 20. That's not good.
I mean,
if you are in an at-large bubble.
Is this
Bucknell
all,
is 24.
Is this all because of Army taking them down? Like, because that's what it, right? It kind of feels like. I mean, Virginia's below them.
And maybe Princeton.
Yeah,
both. I think the Princeton loss, I think the Princeton loss hurts more than Army, because Army has some pretty good wins this year. If I'm remembering correctly, Army has some decent wins.
You're right, but like on RPI, like Princeton's closer to, you know, closer to an okay loss. Like
yeah, I think
right
from
now
what
Army's
I saw,
40 or 39.
Army's only good win is right now, besides Rutgers, is UMass at the beginning of the season. That's it. They beat NJIT, Lafayette, and Holy Cross. Now they have Notre Dame left again, and we know what happened last year with Army and Notre Dame.
Right. And that again, last year everyone was saying Army was the last team out, even though Rutgers beat Army, because Army ended the season with that big win over Notre Dame. So, and it's Princeton has a huge game coming up against Cornell this weekend. If Princeton beats Cornell, that looks really good for Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers, you know, Brown was a huge add to the Rutgers schedule. Brown is way down.
Brown has been bad.
Yeah,
so that's tough, because when you're planning out your schedule, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Brown's got Dylan Malloy. They're this high-flying team. Like, oh, my God, Brown is – this is huge for them. And then you don't expect to see them fall off like they have. You don't expect Army to kind of have this fall. Adding Syracuse is obviously huge. You know, Robert Morris has had a very good season, so that helps Rutgers as well. But
I think sneaky good win, like that people kind of forget about. Robert Morris is a really good team this year,
right? And I think that in my mind, I didn't realize Army had that lack of good wins. So I feel like Army was really hyped up at the beginning of the season. That could be just my kind of tunnel vision. But I feel that Princeton loss hurts more, but I could be wrong. Obviously, if Princeton beats Cornell, then that changes things dramatically.
Mm-hmm. I was – so, like, if you had to – like, if you had to put odds on it, what do you think Rutgers' chance of this year?
I think they'll beat Ohio State. Even with Ohio State coming off the emotional win over Maryland, I think that they win there. And then they should have beat Hopkins the first time. They could have beat Maryland the first time. I would put it at like plus 250 that they make the NCAA tournament.
I think so. Like I said, I think you beat Ohio State. You just can't lose Ohio State. In terms of like you're going from like pretty good to like sweating, you know, with everybody else, you know.
Right.
So because I would love to see the NCAA not give 3 at-large bids to the Big Ten. I want to see this world where the ACC is only going to get maybe 3 teams at most. Exactly. Two probable, especially if Notre Dame is Syracuse lose. There's a real chance there's going to only be 2 bids, but.
Right, and it's, I mean, the Big Ten's worst team beat one of the ACC top teams from Notre Dame. Like, it's so confounding. And Syracuse is another team that, Daryl, over the map, you don't know which Syracuse you're going to get week by week. And it's like, I know, like, Rutgers fans are, like, kind of stunned when they see Syracuse is projected to get a seed. I don't know, after that Navy loss, I'm sure things are going to look a little different, and depending on the ACC tournament, but
last time I checked from Pat Stevens, I think they're hanging in there as an 8 seed. They play Cornell.
Syracuse can go anywhere from not making the tournament to being like a top 5 seed, and they legitimately control their own destiny of like where they're.
I feel like sometimes for like these teams like North Carolina, Notre Dame, it's the name of the school, and in the end, cash rules everything around me. Green, get the money, dollar bill, y'all. And if you don't have a Syracuse, like you're on the borderline of like, do you think they're in and they're not in? The committee's probably gonna be they're gonna be in over like a Bucknell because they want money.
Right.
And it sucks because sometimes it is Rutgers that's, you know, as we've seen the past couple of years, the victim. And Hopkins gets in over Rutgers after, you know, Rutgers beats them twice.
I mean, that was a legitimate. I thought that was fine, that call, but.
And Hopkins was seated. That was the most egregious part, is that Hopkins was seated. That was like, they were like a.
Oh, no, not seven. That year we had to go to Brown and they whooped us. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Last year. Was Brown's final 4 year. Yeah.
And you guys killed Dylan Malloy. Thanks for that, dude.
Well, I'm, like I said, until the bracket is printed out and it says that Rutgers made the NCAA tournament, I don't know what to think. But I do legitimately think that Rutgers has a chance to make a run in the tournament. Just judging by their scores against Maryland and, you know, whatever you think of Hopkins, I think they're going to be right there. I mean, they beat Syracuse pretty handily. They should have beat Hopkins. That Hopkins goal that they scored to win that game gives me nightmares. Like, as a coach, I would be dejected. Like, that was – they gave Hopkins that goal by sliding when no one was beat. I'm sick thinking about it.
Again, I thought that call was good as well, but no, I'm just kidding, Bill. Bill, before we go to rapid fire, did you have questions? I didn't know if Aaron said that maybe you had some questions for us. If you did, good. If not, we can definitely go to rapid fire. You've been much too gracious with your time.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. Excellent. These are like fun, you know, like we'll have too much, you know, thinking to do. But okay, let's start here. This one, actually, you're right on the border, so this could tip either way. Taylor ham or pork roll? What do you call
pork
it?
Pork roll. Pork roll. And if you say Taylor ham, you're wrong.
Thank you. All right,
thanks.
Perfect.
Jesus.
All right. Sub or hoagie? This divides Chris and I, though.
Wait. Are you kidding me, dude? Thank you.
Wait, did you say
Safe,
hoagie?
Are you? Yeah. Safe. Hoagie. Are you kidding me?
It's definitely a sub. First off,
that's a South Jersey thing.
It's definitely a sub. Chris probably calls
that's
it
a South
pop.
Jersey thing.
Chris calls like soda pop or something because like no one's South Jersey. There's definitely a sub, but go ahead.
That's a Philly South Jersey thing calling them subs.
Thank you, Chris. You should be calling them subs.
I call them hoagies.
That's the only thing. That's branding right there. That shows you how powerful.
No, you go get a hoagie from the deli. You don't get a sub from the deli.
Of course. Yeah. They look like subs. That's why they're called subs. Submarines. All right. This is wonderful banter. Favorite shore spot?
Long Beach Island.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's acceptable. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of Margate AC area, but LBI's great spot as well. Do you have a second favorite? Or like, well, we can if you even want to go that
Port
far.
Pleasant. I'm a boardwalk kind of guy. I like the boardwalk.
Under the boardwalk.
You ever come through AC boardwalk or OC boardwalk?
No. When I was younger, my grandparents liked going to AC, so we would go. But I haven't been back.
No worries. So were you checking out? Rutgers football games when they had those fat subs, and if you did, what was your favorite fat sub?
So there's this place in Princeton called Hoagie Haven, and they also have
a hoagie, not a sub safe, but continue.
I'll have to visit it. I'll do my research on this. I'll see what's going on.
So they had stuff similar to the fat sandwiches, and my go to sandwich is the Sanchez, which is chicken fingers, mozzarella sticks, and French fries. And then they have the special sauce. So that would be my go-to order.
Let me write that down. Hoagie Haven or Heaven?
Yeah, I'm in Princeton on Nassau Street. Okay. Shout out to Hoagie Haven.
Yeah, all right. I'll be there. I'll see you, Haven.
No free ads, but Hoagie Haven.
Amen. Okay, so let's do – we'll make it – we'll divide it. Your favorite place to eat when you're in LBI? And your favorite place to eat? Let's do it for Mercer County. Besides Hoagie Haven.
My favorite place to eat in LBI would probably be Panzones. Shout out to Panzones. And then in Mercer County, that one's tough.
You can make this favorite place to go get pizza near home. Let's put it that way. If it
I like Menino's. Menino's 3 on Route 33.
Menino's 3. All right, I'm getting a lot of good material here. Places to eat, so I appreciate it, Bill. I got one more, and Chris probably maybe has a couple, but again, since you're on the border, New York City or Philly? Where did you enjoy visiting more?
Pick New wisely. York
City. Oh!
Yo, oh. Chris is going to get me fired because I actually... I love New York just because, you know, I just love New York. It's the greatest city in the world. But no, this is good. I knew this would be close because you're in Trenton. I was going to say...
I'm a Mets fan. I'm a Mets fan, so I got to be... I go to the city...
I was just going to say, because like one of the cool things about this, I kind of didn't even know it until I got here, we get like double all the TV, right? We get New York stations and Philly stations, so it's great.
Yes.
Well, first of all, Safe, I love how you're now like a whole Trenton/New York guy. After
Christopher is one New Jersey.
You've lived in Philadelphia for a long time.
I grew from Philly.
You had a job in Philadelphia. You went to the parade
last weekend. I was in Philly last weekend.
Chip Kelly shirt.
No, listen, Philly has my heart.
You run through Philadelphia.
New
all
York
the time.
New York is New York.
And now you're like, oh, I don't care about Philadelphia. New York's my home.
That is a bald-faced lie. You're gonna just like.
I can't believe you. You first thinking Yale would upset Albany, even though that was not an upset.
There was an upset.
Then still not even ranking Yale one. Now this.
We're taking away from our guests. you'll get me fired later on, Chris. But let's wrap this up. Did you have anything for Bill before we wrap up? Okay.
Bill, football team. Favorite football team?
Pittsburgh Steelers.
What?
So my family's from Pittsburgh. My family's from Pittsburgh.
Ah, so you like the Penguins then?
No, I actually like the Flyers.
What? This is the weirdest thing.
This is gold.
Who's your basketball team?
This is making it even weirder. The Boston Celtics.
This guy is weird. This is messed up.
So, but New Jersey.
Pretty much a homer, or not a homer, like a bandwagon fan for like every team.
So the New Jersey Nets left. So New Jersey is without a basketball team. And then I grew up and I loved reading Bill Simmons. And Bill Simmons is obviously the Boston sports guy. So I love the way he would write about the Celtics. So that made my Celtics my favorite basketball team.
That's sad.
This is the
Mets are my favorite baseball team. How am I a bandwagon? The Mets stink.
This is one thing I love about true Philly guys like Chris, like they that really Chris loves me, but they hate Jersey, and then like if you have the gall to not like a Philly team and you're within 100 mile radius of Philadelphia, you're just like, you know, committed a war crime. So
I'd say like a 50,000 mile radius world domination. By the way, the Eagles won the Super Bowl this year.
Indeed. Wait, so who do you
remember? Yeah, we heard.
Oh yeah, so. So, you never liked the Devils? Since you asked about hockey.
No, not really.
I was just going to say, just because they won so much, I thought maybe, that it would bleed over, you know, just being a fan.
No, I don't know. I'm just not, like, the biggest hockey guy in the world in general.
Oh, yeah.
But I do – I would have to say it would definitely be the Flyers.
Would you fire Dave Hackstall at this moment?
I mean, they're banged up, they're hurt, but I don't know. Hockey is such a fickle sport.
No, come on, baby.
Fire him. Fire him.
Yes. Yes.
only hot takes are welcome here, Bill. So.
That was I want everyone to know that was peer pressure.
That's all Chris does. Wow. That's all Chris does is bully and pressure. It's hostile work environment.
That's what they do with Papa.
Oh, okay. Bill, again, you've been much too gracious for your time. Everybody needs to check his writing out on the banks. Shout out to your boy Aaron. He was missed, but Bill, this was a great show. I hope you had a good time.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Bill, where can people follow you on Twitter, by the way?
They can follow me on Twitter at Tharp Rules Part 2.
part two.
Something. Yeah, so I forgot the password. I forgot the password to my original Twitter, so I had to get a new one.
That's interesting.
Shout out to our guests.
Yeah, and the rules is with a Z at the end, so.
Yeah.
Don't judge me.
I'm just tweeting it out right now. But shout out to Bill. Shout out to the good people on the banks. Shout out to Rutgers. Hope they make it, man.
Hey, good luck to Aaron though. He's having a baby, so that's why.
Oh, you know,
I'm gonna give a shout out to.
I figured I was like let somebody closer to him drop that news. I didn't know if he wanted that out there, but yeah, obviously congrats.
Oh yeah. I don't know. Maybe we'll cut this.
Hopefully it'll be all good, Aaron. You were missed. So, Christopher, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure talking to you, Safe, and Bill. Thank you again for your time. Absolutely love it.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it, and really excited to talk to you guys about the sport of lacrosse. So thank you for that.
Oh, excellent. So Ryan's going to do some compression magic, get the link ready, and this should hopefully go up Thursday night or Friday morning. So
be awesome. Right there. Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Bill, and thanks again for listening, and talk to you guys soon.